This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. President Trump unveiled his budget proposal earlier this week. The plan cuts more than $600 billion from Medicaid over the next decade. It also includes deep cuts to health research, higher education, and more. Trump cuts to Medicaid come on the heels of the GOP's American Health Care Act. The ACA replacement bill passed the House earlier this month. Yesterday, the Congressional Budget Office reported that 23 million people would be left uninsured as a result. The cuts proposed to Medicaid would ultimately affect close to 2 million enrollees in North Carolina. Joining me now is Don Taylor, public policy professor at the Sanford School of Public Policy at Duke and an expert on health care policy and health economics. Welcome back, Don.
Thanks for having me.
So it's a little bit complicated and confusing here because we've got the Trump budget, which makes cuts to Medicaid, and then we've got ACHA. But let's start just with the Trump budget, if we can, for a moment, and talk about its impact on Medicaid to the extent that we can figure that out.
Right. So you framed that really well. ACA has a huge cut in Medicaid, and then the Trump budget would come just behind that and have $600 billion more in cuts to the Medicaid program. If you imagine that both of these came to pass and these budgets, these cuts, you know, became law, in 2018, North Carolina is set to have about a $14 billion Medicaid budget, about $10 billion from the federal government, about $4 billion from state budget. If these cuts all came to pass, it would be about a $4 billion reduction in the federal share of North Carolina's Medicaid program. So that's like a $1 in $4 cut to our Medicaid program. And the cuts would come with quote unquote flexibility, but the flexibility would really be for the state to either figure out how to raise the taxes to keep the program as we know it in place, or to decide either what beneficiaries would be cut or what services to be cut. So just would be a profound and a tremendous cut to our Medicaid program if it came to pass.
So we have to sort of do it in terms of dollars because we don't know if you would simply cut eligibility and X number of people who are currently being served would not be served anymore, or whether services would be reduced and that sort of thing. Hard to know, but when you're talking about nearly half, 40% of the federal contribution lost and a state that has shown no instinct to raise taxes to replace that, those cuts have to come from somewhere.
Right. There's no simple way out. It's been messaged as flexibility, but the main point to understand is the flexibility would be for the state of North Carolina to either decide how to raise taxes to keep the program, which beneficiaries to no longer cover, or decide what services to no longer cover. So I actually believe we need reform of the Medicaid program, but this is a straight budgetary, really a slashing of the budget with no time to make plans and no plan for how to, you know, make the program more efficient.
And this comes on the heels, of course, of a decision by the state several years ago, not to expand Medicaid. So that left 500,000 North Carolinians without coverage who otherwise might have gotten it. Is there any indication whether or not these cuts, whether it makes a difference if a state had expanded Medicaid or not in terms of the impact on the state?
It would have perhaps a slight budgetary impact in terms of what the baseline state budget would be for the cuts. But it's important to realize ACA essentially does away with Medicaid expansion. It also further cuts the Medicaid program, the existing Medicaid program that existed before the ACA. And the Trump budget has $600 billion more in cuts, not to ACA expansion, but to the most basic Medicaid program that we have. So probably Medicaid expansion, the states that have expanded, especially the states with Republican governors, are making noises about not liking these proposals. And so there's probably more of a political effect than a budgetary effect. But as you say, North Carolina has set out Medicaid expansion so far.
So let's talk about ACHA as well, because the idea here is that, as you suggest, with these cuts, there would be flexibility. We can't be sure exactly how many people or how they might be affected. But one of the controversies over this is whether under ACA, people with pre-existing conditions would effectively be left without insurance. The Congressional Budget Office says absolutely people with pre-existing conditions would be in a position, many of them, where they could no longer afford insurance. Republicans say, oh, no, that's not true, because the states would have these large pools where they could then subsidize that difference. It will be more expensive, of course, but the states will subsidize this. Tell us how this might play out and you know, how you would analyze the two competing ideas here.
Sure. So one of the key things ACA does is does away with the individual mandate, which has been ideologically suspect for Republicans. And in return, it brings about the concept of continuous coverage. And it basically says that if you have continuous coverage defined as a gap of not more than 2 months, then you have the right to buy health insurance. However, a state could ask for a waiver under ACA to both undo essential health benefit coverage, which basically says what has to be covered in insurance, and also could ask for this waiver from individual mandate. They basically assume, the CBO, Congressional Budget Office, assumes that about 1/6 of the people in the United States will live in states that request a waiver. For those states, they basically say, we think the individual insurance market's going to implode and kind of fall in on itself. For the states that they assume don't ask for a waiver, they basically say that what's going to happen is you're going to have a loss of about 23 million people with health insurance coverage by 2026. 14 million of those will be Medicaid loss coverage, 9 million individual market coverage. But the fundamental thing to understand is that people who are young and healthy will actually have lower premiums. That's true. People in their 50s and 60s and people who are ill are going to have higher premiums. And so basically they go on to say that even in states that don't request waivers, the premiums are going to escalate to a degree to which they're going to become unaffordable, which is essentially a practical ending of many of the protections brought about by the Affordable Care Act.
Because they become more expensive. But what about this idea that states have a kind of Medicaid pool or an insurance pool that they would use to subsidize? Wouldn't that mean that they would have to expand that pool, therefore raise taxes?
Sure. So a state could say, well, we're really worried. We don't want it to be so expensive for people in their 50s and 60s. And the state of North Carolina, for example, could then say, well, we're going to come up with a tax credit program for people in their 50s and 60s and make it more affordable. They would essentially then be recreating the Affordable Care Act just with state dollars instead of federal dollars. I mean roughly
right.
Speaking.
And yes. It might require more state dollars, which again, this particular legislature has shown no appetite to increase taxes.
Yeah, and the big, risk pools, if you are segregating the sickest people alone, this is really the opposite of insurance. Mm-hmm. This is a terrible, terrible idea. And so the language is always, we want to help the people that really need it the most. The answer is the most efficient way to help folks like that is through bigger risk pools, which is what the ACA was trying to do. And of course, in many ways, the biggest problem with the ACA has been that the individual mandate has been too weak, not that it's too strong. So it failed to get, healthier people in. And if all the healthier folks were in, then the premiums would actually, decrease.
So ACA, in a way, accentuates the what's worst about ACA. It actually exacerbates the problem.
Yeah, I think in one sense, by saying we're going to segregate the folks who are the sickest.
You make smaller pools. Medicare not touched in Trump's budget. And this is interesting because Medicare is a program, of course, that affects everybody, rich and poor. That wasn't touched. Only programs that help the underprivileged. So this is a kind of fascinating thing. But why not Medicare?
I think if you listen to what President Trump said on the campaign trail, he was very proud to say he wasn't going to cut Social Security, Medicare, or Medicaid. So here he's clearly gone back on the Medicaid pledge. And so I guess to the extent that it's going to be pain, it's going to be to the poor first. He has left Medicare completely untouched. And if you look at the President Obama's budgets, he never had a single budget like that. Many of his programs and ideas didn't come about, but he was always proposing things that, served as reductions in Medicare spending. And then Social Security, the basic retirement aspect of the program has not been touched, but there are some cuts to Social Security disability. So Social Security is not only a retirement program, but it's a survivor benefit and also a disability insurance program. And there are some cuts to Social Security disability. So if we were thinking of President Trump's campaign promises. He kept it on Medicare. He partially kept it, I guess, on Social Security, and he's really gone back on it on Medicaid.
But it's interesting to see who gets affected most because, again, the broad-based program that affects Medicare covers you whether you're wealthy or not.
Yes.
Not touched.
Yes.
Only people who are poor, essentially, were hurt by the Medicaid. So it's kind of interesting to see as this pattern emerges. Also, the budget includes cuts to the Children's Health Insurance Program, known as CHIP. Tell us about that.
So in the 1990s, essentially after the failure of the Clinton health reform, there was a bipartisan notion to create CHIP, which is really best thought of as a sidecar to the Medicaid program. And it raised eligibility levels for children And so in North Carolina, for example, I think children up to 200% of poverty are covered via the CHIP program. And so CHIP has often been a totally bipartisan agreement, even when there was tremendous disagreement about other aspects of health policy. And this is maybe the beginning of a crack in that wall, so to speak. It's actually hard to imagine. You know, politically, children are much more...
Which is why it was broken out in the first
place,
right?
Exactly. CHIP is basically Medicaid by another name because right. Medicaid is thought of as poor people's health insurance and children are more right. politically palatable. So really, in my mind, CHIP is just thought of as another means or a part of a Medicaid reduction.
But you could see cuts in that program as well. Again, politically... We'll have the political junkie on tomorrow, and we'll talk about the political implications, but we want to talk about some of the economic and policy implications with my guest, Don Taylor, a public policy professor at the Sanford School of Public Policy at Duke. Don, always a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
He joined us to talk about the proposed Medicaid cuts and the impact on North Carolina, and we've got links to this program and our discussion on our website, stateofthings.org. Just ahead, the first black woman to become a principal dancer in an American ballet company. We'll talk with ballerina Deborah Austin on the State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. Stay with us.